Hello, this is Paula with the Decatur Herald and Review on Thursday, October 1st, 2015. We'll start with a story titled Sharon Alpe's Energy Power Center for Entrepreneurship. And it's the first time I've read for this, so I hope I do okay. It's in Decatur. Sweeping in, not because she was late, but because it's how she enters a room, Sharon Alpe gave an explanation she has given before. A student telephoned her at Millikan University, and although the newly retired director of the Center of Entrepreneurship needed to leave for an appointment, she stayed on the line the few minutes it took to give her counsel. Susan Krummel, ostensibly Alpe's boss, since she was named Dean of the Tabor School of Business in 2013, is also among those who count Alpe as one of the most valuable mentors of their careers. She is a selfless, selfless woman and one of the most important people in the entire discipline of entrepreneurship, Krummel said. Robin King, CEO of EPL Bioanalytical Services in Harristown, and among hundreds of people Alpe and the center have mentored over the years, calls her a force of nature. I'm having a hard time getting this to go down here. Sorry. So does Michael Hennessy, CEO of the Coleman Foundation, which supports entrepreneurship education among other causes. We deal with a lot of professors, and she is a standout, he says. And it's not going down again, so sorry about that. Alpe, who turned over her Center for Entrepreneurship to protege Julian Shields upon her retirement June 30th, is staying on as a Tabor as a consultant for at least one more year. Why step down now? Alpe knew she could leave the center in good hands, those of Associate Director Andrew Heiss, in addition to Shields, and at 68, she said she has other things she wants to do. The first is making a difference in Decatur's nonprofit community, and that's all she would say. What set her on her life's path? Alpe points to the death of her older brother, David Taylor, a history professor at Mankato State University in Minnesota, who died 5 years ago after she gave him one of her kidneys in 1980. He had his PhD at 26 from KU, which is Kansas University in Lawrence, and was a brilliant man, Alpe said. I don't want to be maudlin, but I decided the only way to honor him was to do something that mattered. Working as a corporate health consultant in Decatur at the time, the Kansas native went on to earn a master's in small business and entrepreneurship from the University of Illinois at Springfield in 1989, the year her son turned 7 and her daughter turned 5. She joined Millikan's faculty in 1990 as director of Tabor's Small Business Institute, and with $25,000 from the Coleman Foundation, started the Center for Entrepreneurship in 1998. Alpe was named a Coleman Foundation professor in 2003 after using seed money from the foundation to create an arts and entrepreneurship multidisciplinary program based on student-run ventures. It was when Alpe hired Shields in 2013 to run that program that an exit strategy began to form in her mind. Earning an MBA from Millikan, Shields had previously been the extended learning coordinator for the Decatur School District, where she created an implementing experiential summer learning and after-schools program. Alpe greatly admired Shields' energy and ability to engage students, and the feeling is mutual. Sharon has developed entrepreneurship champions throughout Millikan's campus, from the arts to science and technology, Shields said. I look forward to continuing to extend the mission of the Center for Entrepreneurship by engaging youth, students, faculty, and businesses in creating opportunities and value in the community. Robin King said Alpe and the Center for Entrepreneurship made a huge difference in her ability to save EPL bioanalytical services from bankruptcy 10 years ago as the business struggled to move into testing genetically modified crops after suffering through a decline in the development of new farm chemicals. She was part of the group that invited me to join EPL, King said. While we were operating on the shoestring, her center provided grants, helped us with meeting rooms, and loaned us overhead projectors when we would have clients in. Today, EPL has been a finalist for an International Agro Award for the last 3 years running and won an award in 2013. Sharon has so much energy, so many ideas, and knows how to get things done, King said. She has connections with so many people and helps them connect with one another and can always seem to help you figure out how to move forward. In addition to mentoring students and members of the community in successful entrepreneurial endeavors, Alpi received the Woman in Business Advocate of the Year Award at the annual Governor's Small Business Summit in 2001 and the Teaching Excellence and Campus Leadership Award in 2003. She and her husband, Jim, Executive Director of Decatur Housing Authority, have a daughter, Kate Alpi, who's 33, living in Kansas City, Missouri, with her husband, Dylan Padberg, and 2-year-old son, Harper, and a son, Michael Alpi, 30, of Indianapolis. A Sharon T. Alpi scholarship has been endowed by friends, family, and colleagues to honor her 25 years at Millikan and her teaching energy and service. University President Patrick White calls Alpi a model rainmaker. We have all benefited from her steady shower of innovation and the occasional thunderstorm and the hurricane force of her passion, ideas, and commitment, White said. Her influence and leadership extends far beyond this campus, and she is one of a handful of the most important leaders in Millikan's history. Okay, next story, jury acquits Rakeem Hill of shooting at house. Indicator. And let's see. After deliberating for 1 hour Wednesday afternoon, the nine women and 3 men on Rakeem C. Hill's jury signed verdicts of not guilty on both counts. Hill was charged with aggravated discharge of a firearm and possession of weapons by a felon after being accused of shooting at a residence occupied by a woman the night of March 11th. When the clerk of Associate Judge James Coryell read the verdicts in court a few minutes after 5 p.m., Hill appeared surprised as he sat at the defense table. His lawyer, Andrew Wessler, patted him on the back. He will be returned to prison to serve out the duration of his 2-year term for a conviction in a case similar to the one for which he was just acquitted. Hill's prior felony convictions were for shooting at a woman's house in 2013 and shooting at a 16-year-old boy in 2010. Sounds like he's gotten a lot of trouble. The state had a difficult case to prove after the woman, whose house was riddled with 13 bullets, changed her story after fingering Hill as the shooter shortly after the incident. During his opening statement Tuesday, Wessler said the woman later said the original story she told police was a lie. She said she lied because she was scared and promised drugs, Wessler told the jurors. With the victim eliminated as a prosecution witness, the state relied on the testimony of a neighbor who testified that she saw a man with a limp and dreadlocks shooting at the house as she ducked down in her parked car. She viewed the scene through her car mirrors by streetlights about 10 p.m. That witness picked Hill out of a photo lineup 2 days after the shooting and identified him in court. She did not know Hill or anything about him before she picked him out of the lineup. Hill, who walks with a pronounced limp, was asked by the judge to walk in the courtroom for the jurors. In her closing argument, Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Pam Domish said the witness who testified got a good look at one of the 2 men shooting at the house. Some of the projectiles went into the residence, Domash said. But Wessler countered that the witness only had a split second to see the shooter from a distance in poor lighting conditions while her car was facing away from the scene. 2 days later, she makes the identification, Wessler said. There's no reason to believe she saw my client shooting up the house that night. Okay, next. Ameren tells investors Illinois is great for utilities, written by Tony Reed in New York. Ameren Corporation told Wall Street it will spend billions of dollars to give Illinois consumers a better power and gas delivery system because the land of Lincoln generates the best return on its investments. Ameren, the corporate parent of the Ameren Illinois is spending some $7.5 billion on electricity and natural gas delivery and infrastructure in the state over the next 4 years. That represents a 6% growth rate for natural gas spending and a 5% growth rate for electricity-related work. Speaking Wednesday at the Wolf Research Power and Gas Leaders Conference in New York City, Ameren said Illinois had a regulatory framework that gives realistic and fast returns on every dollar spent. But in Missouri, where Ameren has utility and power generation operations, the regulatory framework is tougher and takes longer to work with. Because of that, infrastructure investments in the Show Me State are pegged to rise at just 2% through 2019. Regulatory frameworks drive how we think about investments, said Warner Baxter, the chairman, president, and CEO of St. Louis-based Ameren Corporation. We're still putting money to work in Missouri, but not nearly to the extent we are in other jurisdictions. And there is a lot more money coming down the pipe for Illinois. In addition to the $7.5 billion investment through 2019, Baxter said the company was chewing over how it might sink another $500 million to $1 billion in Illinois power and gas projects. Once we finish our planning process this year, we will come out early next year and tell you how we are going to allocate that capital among the Illinois jurisdictions, Baxter told the conference. Ameren is all charged up about the state because of its regulatory system known as formula rate making. This uses a streamlined process that rewards utilities such as Ameren Illinois with a quicker return on their investment in the shape of new customer power and gas delivery charges reset annually. In addition, major regional power delivery projects are governed by federal rules that also allow for a fast return on investment dollars. So the more Ameren and its utilities spend, the more they get back as timely interest on those investments. Baxter told Wall Street his utility customers win because all the new projects will deliver them a more robust, technically sophisticated power and gas system that is less prone to failure and offers more options. And Ameren's investors win big with an expanding profit base that brings home solid returns year after year. A slew of facts and figures shown to the New York conference highlighted an expected 7-10% annual growth in earnings per share through 2018. As Ameren's rate base is forecast to grow some 6% a year over the same period. On top of that, investors get a flat dividend standing currently at $1.64 per share, equal to a 4% yield. That puts Ameren in the top rank of utility dividend payouts. We do believe we have a distinctive value proposition for our investors, Baxter said. We believe we have a strong total share return proposition for all of you. Helping to drive that proposition is Ameren Illinois' latest request for an electricity delivery rate hike worth $109 million and a gas delivery rate hike worth $45.6 million. Both cases are set to be decided by the state legislatures by the end of the year as they consider objections and hear arguments. One unhappy customer has already made his views known on the website of the Illinois Commerce Commission, the state regulators. Commenting on the proposed gas rate increase, customer Randall Lloyd wrote, "I am against the rate increase. The rates should be lowered. with the degree of revenue being generated by Ameren, they should not be given a rate increase. They should be passing their savings on to the customers. It is high time to heed the call of the consumer. It is imperative to decrease the rates. Okay, next, employees must stand out, add value more, lecturer says, written by Chris Lavardi, Indicator. Stephen Krempel challenged Millikan University students Wednesday to consider how they can add value to their future places of employment. Krempel, an international trainer, author, and consultant, was the speaker for the James W. Moore Lecture. He said figuring out the rules is an important step no matter where somebody ranks with an organization or how long they've been there. I need to move it down again. Many rules they don't tell you, Krempel said. Those are the landmines. Krempel, who is president and CEO of Krempel Communications International, spoke about winning in the work world. The Moore Lecture was established in 1991 and named after a former vice president of A.E. Staley Manufacturing Company, said Mark Munoz, a Millikan professor of management and international business who will become interim dean of the Tabor School of Business in November. The lecture each year is intended to challenge and inspire students, Munoz said. Speakers represent innovative or progressive political or artistic views. Krempel said businesses that become great make a decision along the way to do so. It's about overcoming the little voice that says not to step up and do something that could make you stand out, he said. It's about getting remembered, Krempel said. For entrepreneurs, you've got to make sure customers remember you. He said to communicate confidentially, connect personally, and stand out in any organization. The smartest or most hardworking person isn't necessarily going to be the one who gets promoted, said Krempel, who shares similar messages with business leaders from around the world in places including China, India, and Singapore. His 25-year career includes working for Fortune 500 companies, including Starbucks Coffee Company, Yum! Brands Incorporated, PepsiCo, Restaurants International, and Motorola. Employers are always looking for future leaders, Krempel said. You have to solve somebody's problem in an organization, he said. That is part of your work to go into a company and look for problems to solve. Krempel said being able to make a personal connection can make a difference the few times somebody might have to meet the CEO of their company. He said being able to speak concisely is important in a business setting. Okay, next, French Academy students follow their maps to dessert. Couldn't tell if this is dessert or desert, but it's dessert. And there's a picture of French Academy second graders using a map while learning how to navigate landmarks at Nelson Park. And it was written by Valerie Wells. The French Academy second graders knew they were going to Nelson Park on Wednesday, and they knew they were going to have lunch at the beach house. What they didn't know is that a classmate's mom and their teacher's son worked there, and they were going to get a special dessert. It's a watermelon ice, sort of like the shaved ice dessert, said Chanel Granberry, whose son, Antaeus Green, was the only child who knew what was coming and amazingly had kept the secret. It's pretty good, to be honest with you. The dessert was especially appropriate considering the kids learned the cardinal directions by memorizing never eat sour watermelon. Teacher Diane Cox told the students that her son Nick, the chef, had moved to St. Louis to attend culinary school and stayed there for a while, where he opened 7 restaurants. He came home to Decatur to be nearer to his parents and brother and sister. We want to make sure our food is the best in town, Nick Cox told the kids. Everybody in the restaurant industry wants people talking about them in a good way. We all wish we were rock stars. We all want to be famous. The students saved change and kept their eyes peeled for lost coins on the ground and brought them all to school to pay for the excursion, said, and Diane Cox got a discount from the restaurant for the group. The trip was a culmination of a unit on how to read a map, part of French Academy's STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math focus. The children learned how to ride a city bus, made maps of their own invented parks, and followed a map in Nelson Park to find the playground, which was the most important feature of their own park's designs, too. Malaya Hills Park included monkey bars and swings, and Jihad Young had a football field, basketball court, and swimming pool in his park. Jihad's mom, Kenesha Young, and grandmother Jackie Flowers accompanied him on the trip. "I like to see what my grandson is learning," Flowers said. "I like to know what he's doing." Okay, next, four finalists for Auditor Post, written by Kirk Erickson in Springfield. The search for Illinois' next Auditor General is down to four finalists. In an announcement Wednesday, a panel of lawmakers announced it had whittled down 14 original applications to four, including two lawmakers interested in the post. Along with Democratic State Representative Frank Martino of Spring Valley and Elaine Nekritz of Northbrook, the other two finalists include Mary Moldelsky of Walnut Creek, California, and Larry Sanders, an attorney from Marion. Modelsky, an Illinois native, is the division chief for internal audit for Alameda County, California. Sanders is the general counsel of the Wren Lake Conservancy District and has provided legal representation to numerous southern Illinois school districts. The four are competing to replace retiring Auditor General William Holland, who is stepping down from the $150,000 per year job in December. The General Assembly's Legislative Audit Commission is expected to meet soon to decide who will be recommended to the full House and Senate. The Auditor General serves as our partner in our effort to ensure fairness, transparency, and accountability in state government, said Republican State Senator Jason Berickman of Bloomington, who co-chairs the panel. "This is why it's so important that we find the best candidates for the position. The legislature has the final authority to choose the next auditor, who will serve a 10-year term. The position is the lone statewide constitutional officer not elected by voters. Rather, auditors must be approved by a 3-5 majority vote in both the Illinois House of Representatives and the Illinois Senate. Our next Auditor General will have a tough act to follow, as current Auditor General Bill Holland has built an impeccable reputation as steward of taxpayer dollars," said Democratic State Representative Bob Rita of Blue Island, who co-chairs the commission. A timeline for the panel's recommendation is not known. The House and Senate are not set to return to the Capitol until October 20th. And you can follow Kurt on Twitter, Illinois Stage. Okay, that'll be it for the first half of the Herald Review, Decatur Herald Review, on Thursday, October 1st. Please stay tuned for the second half, and we'll see you again next week. Thanks a lot.